Okay, Rand. I'm Randy Bush, IIJ, and University of Oregon, another strange place. And this is about. There's the man, Clarence. Thank you. This is about, from the ops and ISP and RIR perspective of a PKI, and this is different than what Steve was telling you at the keynote. And just in case why you wonder what Eid al-Fitr is, it's the last day of Ramadan when you go with your family. And the key thing is why I'm using it is it's the breaking of the fasting period and of all evil habits. And the evil habits I want to break are the unknown quality of the WHOIS data. Unknown is a nice word. The unknown quality of the IRR data, and where unknown again is a nice word, right? There is no formal means of verifying if a new customer really owns the IP space they're asking me to announce. There is no formal means of verifying routing announcements. Okay? I want an end to this stuff. Okay? So there's a big gap in routing security, and it's not router security, worrying about attacking a router. That is a major problem, but it's that protocols, legally, the BGP protocol can be used to tell lies, route hijacking, et cetera, et cetera. And there, I did a JANOG presentation on this. I'll also do it in the afternoon in the routing SIG, an updated version of this, talking about routing security. But the big gap in that discussion is storing and moving the certificates. So, what's the PKI? It's the public key infrastructure, and it's a database that can be a single database, could be distributed, et cetera, et cetera. It contains the certificates identifying the RIRs, identifying the ISPs and endsites, and it contains the delegations of IP addresses and the delegation of AS numbers in a formal sense. Wrong button. Oh, great. Now we have to learn how to deal with that. Okay. And an attestation, in other words, somebody saying formally that entity owns this IP space or this AS, specifies the identity, i.e. the public key of the recipient. I'm failing?
No, the next door is getting your...
Okay, so it specifies the public key of the recipient, and it specifies what's being delegated. And it's signed by the key, by the private key of the entity allocating it. In other words, and I'll go through examples, and it because the IP and AS stuff follows the allocation hierarchy. The IANA to the RIRs, the RIRs to ISPs, to downstream ISPs, to end-user enterprises. Okay? And a delegation, each delegation looks like this. There's an attribute certification that says, I'm going to do an IP space. It's the same for an AS number. There's the description of the space being delegated, and when that expires, because when I contract with the registry to get some space, that contract has a term. And so that registry is going to give me that space for the length of the contract, probably plus 30 or 90 days or something for, you know, an operational slop cushion. But that has an expiry. Then there is my name, my identity, and my public key. And that public key is the crypto version of my identity, because if I sign something with my private key, you can know that I signed it. And the Now, let's remember, this says what's being allocated. This says to whom it is being allocated. But who is allocating it? It's signed. This whole package is signed by the delegator. In other words, the RIR signs the packaging of what is being allocated, for how long, to whom it is being allocated. Okay? Feel free to interrupt me, by the way. But what I'm trying to do here is model most simply what we actually do. Okay? And wrap reasonable crypto around it. Okay? Now, here's an example. Here's my identity cert. RGNet is a name under which I operate some infrastructure. And my public key. Here is some address space. And it's going to be given to me for 1 year plus a three-month cushion. I don't think I'm going to pay an RIR very much for that particular address space, but... And it is signed by APNIC's private key so that anybody can use APNIC's public key, decode, see that indeed APNIC did sign this, see this, and that I have it. Okay? And the way it would work in a delegation chain is IANA would allocate to an IRR, 192/8. So that's the attribute cert. It would have a allocation period, probably quite long from the IANA, and the RIR's identity cert, and it would be signed by the IANA. Okay, this notation reasonable? Okay. The RIR would allocate to an ISP, 192.168/16, the ISP signed by the RIR. The ISP could allocate to a user site, 192.168.42/24, the user's identity wrapped by the ISP. And anyone can verify that this is true, because the public keys are in the PKI, and you can follow this up to the IANA root. Now notice that IANA is the root for ASNs and for IP address space. But as I will continue, it is not the root for anybody's identity. And this is where I strongly disagree with Steve Kent. Okay? Because I don't think the RIRs want our identities owned by the IANA, and I don't think I want my identity, my ability to route, owned by the RIR. I've made an agreement over a lease time of an address space, but not over my identity. But what's cute about this, by the way, when people tell you, oh, this crypto's expensive, when you receive these data, you can verify them right there and mark them as checked. So you don't have to verify it in real time.
You have a plan to notify to the third party after
they fixed that problem.
And
no, just give me the other mic back, Clarence. And then I'll go over there and talk. And no, let's see. So, an ISP and an N site, their certificate, their identity, can be acquired anywhere from Thought, VeriSign, SelfSign, Cert, etc. The RIRs, in most cases, there are lots of small ISPs, etc., etc. They're not going to want to go somewhere to get a cert. They're going to come to the RIR and say, for $25, please give me a cert. That's going to be the 97% case. But for those of us who operate in multiple regions, right? I want one identity. I don't want an APNIC identity and an ARIN identity and a LACNIC identity and an AFRINIC identity. 1, 2, 3, 4. Who do I leave out? Oh, ripe identity. Speak for yourself. Ray shouldn't have to tell me. I want one identity. And what's interesting is these certificates, my identity certificate for an ISP or IR, they don't need an attestation. They don't need to be signed by somebody upstairs because they are only used two ways. They're used in a business transaction. So when I become a member of APNIC, I sign a contract, and just like that contract says, my identity is RGNet with an address, et cetera, I give them my certificate. And I say, this is another representation of my identity, and it's bound by contract. So when I want to do business with APNIC, signing something with that key, APNIC knows that's the contractual key. It's bound to the contract. It's not bound to the IANA. And that's really what an RIR wants. It wants a contract with me and that key to be that contract with me. Okay? And the other thing it's used is binding it to an IP or an ASN attestation by the upstream. That's the only other case, the one I showed you. And all that, it makes no difference that somebody says, I have checked this really is RGNet because it was bound by the contract with the allocator. A downstream ISP for me makes a just like with the RIR, I make a contract with the RIR, and Insight, who buys service from me, gives me their cert, and I allocate space to them. And that, all that matters is that is the contractually binding identity. So none of us need IANA to certify who we are. IANA should not be a identity attesting agency. The RIRs are the same. Your identity is your public key, which is part of the cert. You can get your cert from the IANA, the RIR, the NRO, or you can get it from Thought, or you VeriSign, or a self-signed cert. It makes no difference. The difficult problems we're going to have with these identities is key rollover and revocation in case of security breaches, et cetera. Okay, but I don't want to descend there here because then we get pretty complex. Okay? So how's this fit together in a PKI? Well, here's the bucket we're going to throw it in. Okay, here's the RIR. When I joined the RIR, I gave them my cert. Now, remember, in 95% of the cases, I got that cert from them because I don't want to know how to generate certs or any of that stuff. I'm just a small little ISP. I want to move packets, like Jeff said. I don't want to get involved in certs. But some organizations are very conscious of their certification, are very conscious of their security procedures, are very conscious of who and what they authorized to do what. Okay? Telstra, I believe, paid tens of thousands of dollars to become a formal CA. They don't want to get their identity from someone else. Okay? So the ISP, when they sign the registry contract, tells the registry the identity. The registry can give them ASNs and addresses in that wrapping I showed you before, the registry signing the binding of the space to the ISP's identity, and it goes into the database. Similarly, when a downstream ISP contracts with an upstream ISP, they hand over their cert, and the upstream ISP might generate certs for them. Large ISPs like UUNET, Telstra, et cetera, can have, oh, you want a cert? We have cert-making facilities. We'll make a cert for you. But you own that cert. That's you. I don't own you. I haven't signed the cert or anything saying I know formally who you are. I just created one for you as a service. And then I can allocate space. I can put your cert in the database. I put my cert in the database, and I can attest to all the sub-allocations I give you. Similarly, this ISP, to an Insight, can do the same certificate exchange. It puts the cert in the database, and it attests to the addresses it's handed down there. And this site puts their cert in the database. Okay? So There are also people who want to just take the database's input for research, auditing, testing, validation, et cetera. And all these transactions are interesting, and we need to watch them. Now, of course, I don't believe in one central database. That's not going to work, right, operationally, network partitions, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to have to be replicated, et cetera. What's fun about a PKI, oh, pardon me, let's go back to the transactions. I'm poor at doing this, excuse me. So what do you do to go back? Page up, there we go. These transactions, I'm not firmly fixed on this model, but there are some RFCs that help us with this if they fit our need. And that's RFC 2585 describes some FTP and HTTP transport for the PKI, but it also describes interfaces and the transactions for putting and getting certs into a PKI. An important thing to note is a PKI is self-authenticating because it's just a bundle of certs and you can traverse it and validate them. So there is no need for a secure transport when moving it because you can just test it for validity standalone. It is self-certifying. Okay? So making those replica here is trivial. No special protocol needed to transport this securely, to know, to checksum it, that kind of stuff. Okay? The RIRs are going to need some tools. They're going to want to generate and receive ISP certs. They're going to want to receive space from the IANA. They're going to want to attest. They're going to want to sign allocations to ISPs, and they want to manage their own keys. Okay? Now, what's interesting is the different RIRs might have different ways of doing this. APNIC is going to want to wrap it in, Paul, what it's my APNIC? Is it this rather nice web interface where you interact with them, et cetera, whereas RIPE may do it with their way of looking at it and viewing it. But what's key about this scheme is there's a common underlying tool set, and then each of them presents the underlying data structure and transactions in fitting their business model and their user interface model. By the way, Izumi-san, this extends to NIRs for an extra fee. Okay. ISPs, of course, want to do validation that a customer... How might this thing start to be used? What's going to be the deployment over time? The first thing is, right next week when this is finished, if you believe that, that when somebody comes to me and says, please route my IP space, I can check that indeed, manually, I can check, do they really own that IP space? Not by looking it up in Whois, but by looking at an actually formally verifiable crypto chain that goes all the way to the IAM. Then next year, or right now also, I can debug hijacking. I can say, you say that somebody hijacked your space, I can say, they were allocated that space. Here it is, signed right here. They're not hijacking it. You never owned it. Next. Coffee break? Yes, it is. No, we just had coffee break. Somebody's phone. Leo, it's yours. Okay. Next year, you know, when I build my route filters for my routers, for my peers, to filter for bad announcements, instead of just looking in the IRR, I can validate that data. Or I can throw the IRR entirely away eventually and have formally validatable data on which to build those filters. And Jeff Houston believes this is what people will use for the next 5 years. And 5 years from now, we'll actually run secured BGP in the routers when the crypto and the routers guys catch up. Okay? But note also that this scheme does not care, it does not, works and does not care about the war between SOBGP, SBGP, PGBGP, SPGBBGP, and all those contenders for what's the right way to secure BGP. Just for the record, I happen to agree with Steve Kent. I like SBGP, but that's my personal prejudice. We can go into that somewhere else. Okay? But this is agnostic to that. Okay? The ISPs want to generate or acquire our own identities. We want to register roles with the upstreams. This is new, and I haven't shown you this, but if I'm a big ISP, I'm going to have a department that does financial transactions. So I'm going to generate a cert that I'm going to tell APNIC, here is the public key which you can use to decrypt financial transactions. That is separate from the one that I'm going to generate to request IP space. That's separate from the one I'm going to talk to you about how I want the DNS change, because those are different departments, and I am a big enough organization that I manage my own authorization and security model. And so I manage who can use what key internally through my normal organizational security procedures, and I want to tell the RIR which cert will be used for which kind of transactions, business transactions, roles with the RIR, okay? Whereas APNIC, I don't think they've shown it, but APNIC has a cute thing that they're going to do for the simpler, smaller ISP that has the different roles, but you get your cert from APNIC and you check the boxes that say, hey, you can use this for this function, you can use this for that function. And so it scales, this whole scheme scales from that to the very complex large organization that manages their own security policy. Okay? You can generate certs for downstream ISPs and users, customers, et cetera, and you can sign allocations of IP space and ASNs to downstreams, ISPs, and end users. Though I would note ISPs tend not to delegate ASNs, but they can. Okay, some open tough issues. Coordinating of updates, one central repository just isn't operationally feasible. Okay, there is an LDAP v3 mapping for authentication methods. LDAP was designed to hold these kinds of certificates. I'm not sure it's what I want. I've always been a little afraid of LDAP. Large organizations tend to like it. But I'm not sure. You know, I'm a MySQL guy. But this is actually supposed to do the proper job. And if it doesn't, I'm tempted to go to the designers and say, give me LDAP v4, please, and this is what I need. Right? Supposedly, the ITF is there to meet our needs. We're not here to meet the ITF's needs. Okay. So that could be a very good and LDAP provides for both distribution and replication. Right? So theoretically, this might work for us. Rollover and revocation, i.e., what happens when the IANA's certificate gets compromised? Okay, open issue. Both with roots and the RIRs and with ISPs. So there may be a separate secured communication transport channel necessary to discuss revocation and maintenance of the critical certs. I think that's the story. Yes. These are the kind folks that help me eat, and they do too. And Steve Bellevin, Mr. Firewall, and J.I., his cohort over at Columbia, also work with me heavily on this. Ed.
Yeah, I've seen this before, so that's why I have some comments right away.
Go.
Can you go to slide 7? I've got to challenge your skills with the – oh, cool. You said you have the lease on slide 7, lease expiry. Do you think that's the right word to use it? Because I don't think we really lease the space from the RIRs.
I don't care to get into that politics. Is there a politically neutral word you would suggest?
No, I'm just going to throw that out. It's sort of a rhetorical question.
I think the RIRs, hey, RIRs, what do you think the verb is?
I think we never found a nicer offer. Sometimes some of them might use the word needs, but it has very specific meaning.
The concept of lease is probably closer to what the relationship is as opposed to the concept of buy and sell.
Well, that's for sure. Buy and sell wouldn't need an expiry.
Right. But it's a term, you would establish a term to do it. I mean, there are policies that exist that have terms to it as well, like the experimental address policy that some churches have got a term attached to an address base. So right. You got a term applied here.
And by the way, why I don't want these. Why these? Each one is separate. Each delegation is separate. Is because even though I could have a contract with Aaron for leased address space, and my contract is 3 years long, I might also, and in fact do, have an experimental allocation that's 1 year long, and then there's the whole legacy issue. So I see the granularity of this as. Let Ed finish, or unless you're on the same subject.
The other thing is that you could just apply the term of the lease to the cert itself.
To this cert? It is. This is an attribute.
I'm saying the concept of the lease is applied against the cert, not against the resource.
Is it, you're leasing the attestation, not leasing the space.
Okay. Okay.
The only reason why I brought this up is because I remember last time we talked about this, that you were concerned about the RRs being the Lord Master over the ISP's operations, and that's what I was reacting
well,
to.
Well, that's why this is a separate
right.
entity. That solves the key problem is I can continue to route
right.
even though my contract with them is ended.
Because actually on slide 12 is part of the same comment that I think if you drew slide 12, and I don't want to really edit your slides right now, but if you had a second oval of you have the RIRs stacked up, but if the RIRs were, there's two RIRs in the picture, you'd really show the ISP is not under the RIR, which on Steve Kent's drawing this morning shows like IANA, RIR.
IANA owns us all under Steve Kent's drawing.
Right.
I just can't.
So I finally got that looking at the slide. Oh, you're talking about the ISPs live between the RIRs, not under the RIRs. So.
Right.
So I think in that slide, that would really show it, as opposed to what Steve had.
Beat me up afterwards.
Sure. The next one, slide 13. You had the last bullet, no need for transport security. That's true if you consider only that when I get it, I can dual security. The problem is, can I get it? Something like DOS attack type security or someone.
Right.
So you have, and you
right.
talk about that later in the second
right.
channel.
Right.
Paul. Hello. Paul Wilson from APNIC. I just wanted to raise an issue with you, Randy, and just clarify.
By the way, one thing, Paul gets credit for changing something I was doing into adder certs.
Oh, thank you. it is to do with attribute certificates and the identity certificates, and the idea of that structure is so that you can separate the process of authentication from authorization. And you've mentioned that... you can use a identity certificate, PKC, from anywhere, which is technically true. The RIRs, however, are regarded as being in the business of identifying people. And the Whois database, I think, is a good example of that. When someone looks up a Whois record, they assume that the RIR has actually identified the person who's holding that record, so that when you know, it's not an alias or an anonymous allocation, and so that's my view. That's that's how I think the RIRs see themselves. So the issue of, for instance, attaching an attribute certificate to a self-signed certificate is something that's technically possible and certainly could be done, provided there is an identification process that goes on as well. So we would go through whatever processes we need to satisfy the local policy, and of course we trust our own certificates implicitly. We might trust other RIR certificates implicitly. We might trust various other CAs. But a self-signed certificate is a very good example of one which we would say, well, just because it's a certificate doesn't mean anything. We would go through.
Well, let's remember what's hidden here also is all the details of the naming part of the cert. And when you chose to wrap this, you can choose whether or not to test to it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying yet whether this is replacing who is.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm just clarifying
that. I want to stay out of that for the moment.
There has been a sort of discussion about possibly completely anonymous, unidentified, or randomly generated IDs floating around. But at
and
some
there's
point,
the whole question of residential customers should not be made. I think we know this. I think this scheme maps well enough those parts of the operational and administrative aspects that we understand that we have some instincts of how we might solve these other problems if we agreed on how they should be solved.
Sure. Okay.
I think Herr Volk wanted to comment on that particular point.
Yes. Well, okay. Paul, I certainly don't think that the IRR's business in identifying their clients, it's in giving unique identifiers to the clients.
Actually, the IRRs do identify the client, but if we want to go down there, the identity of the client is actually in the paper contract.
Can I comment?
Well, I don't know. What the heck?
I could
go
speak,
for it.
I can speak from personal experience. That is the business of the IRRs, and I've got several legal cases to prove it. And some court records and some potential investigations by legal authorities to persons making allegations of being someone other than they are in an attempt to retain an address space. So I think identity is part of our business.
But, Ray, would you accept that that's on the paper side?
Yeah.
Right.
It's on the paper side.
Right. And we may in time understand the mapping better of the paper identity to how we want to identify people. You may want to sign a binding of this thing to a who is record if the who is kept alive, for instance.
I think the the identity is kept on paper, sure, but the who is database is all about third parties out there on the internet being able to know who is using address space, and I think I understand that's a fairly common expectation among law enforcement, for instance, that you see some traffic coming from somewhere, you use the Whois database to find out who it is that's got it. And
well, I'll quote Jeff Schiller on that one.
Well, okay.
Law enforcement is made too easy. We call it a police state. I think if we understand what we want, there are many ways to get there. As I said, one thing you could do is, you just can't knock the cable. You've got to plug it in. Picky. One thing we could do is you could sign the binding of this to Whois data if you decide to keep the Whois data there. Jeff.
I'm going to move away from that, although I think one could explore this identity issue for a long, long time. There's a lot to say.
There's actually
a lot to say and a lot to work through in terms of whether this is almost a banknote style that doesn't include identity loading or it truly is an attribute of identity. There's something I really picked up on from what you said that I'm confused about and something else that I'm going to ask you that's exploratory. The first one I really picked up, you have a date there on your resource attribute certificate, a validity date. It's not the date it was created, it's the validity date.
Probably both are there.
And then you said in text, verbally here, I can keep on routing for as long as. And you seem to imply that even when the date after that date, if you present me as your upstream, why should I believe you?
No. Sorry. What I meant was that this date, my identity does not expire on this date.
In a routing context.
So in a routing context, what I haven't shown because I slipped in, is that I wanted to do another, which is, what does a router see? What a router sees is this and the AS one.
Yes.
Okay, that's very similar. And so it sees, and it goes up the chain, and it sees, yes, that ISP has that AS, and yes, that ISP has this space. That ISP might have other ASs and other space. And my point is that just because my contract with a PNIC expired on this date, my contract with Aaron may not have, my legacy space may not have, and what expired was this, my control over this space, not my ability to route.
Okay, I would use a different terminology than ability to route, but I understand what you're saying.
And look at Steve Kent's model, and you will see problems in that area.
Okay, but your ability to route 192.168.42
will expire.
Has a problem in terms of a lifetime.
Correct.
Absolutely. The other question, which is actually more exploratory, and thank you for that clarification because it matches what I was thinking.
No charge.
Cool. We have intermediaries who themselves generate certificates.
Stimmt.
And certainly APNIC, as it knows, did do a CA bit set on its experimental model. Where does the CA bit sit in your attribute certificate model? How do, if you will, subordinate entities like this LIR then become...
Attribute certificates do not have keys.
Correct.
So yeah. The idea that they are CA, has their CA bit set, I don't think has operational meaning.
There's no such thing as a CA bit. So then how do we support LIRs doing the same game?
I believe it is in the naming structure.
So
you can go up the tree. I think this one was the interesting one. So he present or she presented me with this. This user did. And I can go up to the ISP by the enclosing scope.
Or by an explicitly listed parent, or do I have to search for scope? I'm sorry, I'm maybe drilling down here, and why is Jeff down here in this hole?
I will not. I'm over 60 years old, so I know how to say I don't know. I believe that both of those are doable. You and I are both in the habit of keeping prefix lists in trees with scope.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's going to be the ideal way to store these attestations. So possibly links to parent may be doable, may be what you want. It's not clear to me. What is also interesting to me is I don't think this is a unique name in the certificate space. Because I could go to the RIR and say, my customer Sam needs a /16, and the RIR will give it to me, and I will give it to Sam.
Oh, okay, so across the entire space, the same IP address is inside.
The same prefix may not be unique. So I believe we need to scratch our heads just a little more on this, which is good. We have to earn our salary somehow.
For further study is a fine answer. I was just sort of wondering if I'd missed something there that was actually inside.
I've run out of magic.
Cool.